Hey, Nora.
Hey, Sandy.
It is almost eclipse day. By the time people listen to this, it will have been eclipse day. People who are going to, you know, burn their retinas will have burnt their retinas. The national emergencies that are being called will no longer be emergencies. And those of us who are awaiting with wonder to experience one of these grand moments, we'll have experienced it. Are you going to experience it? Are you going? Are you chasing it? Are you in the line of it?
I'm really close to the line. I have to drive about 40 minutes south to get to the full eclipse line. And I don't plan to do that because I have no car and all the cars are booked. And I care in as much as I care about the rotation of the planet.
Which is like something that's great, that the planet rotates.
Totally.
It's great. It's like when you experience it, when you realize that it's happening, you're like, wow, thank goodness this is happening. But, you know, not something you necessarily about all the time. Like myself, I actually I remember being like very, very I would have always kind of been into astronomy and very excited to experience my first eclipse. And I don't know, I just, you know, that's waned over the years, as every eclipse that is described to me is described as like, you know, as you grow older, you're like, wasn't it the last time we heard about this? The only time that this happens in like how many ever ridiculous amount of years? And it's like, yeah, but this one's different because, and it's like, oh, okay. I've experienced enough of those now that I'm just like, you know, if you're in the line of it, congratulations, you won the astronomical lottery and you get to look up and see it. And if not, like me, I'll wait for the next one.
That is, you know what? I love that because that is optimism. And it is also not being pressured by the mob to believe popular things.
Ooh, sounds like you're talking about something specific. Maybe you're using this as an analogy for something else. What could that be?
You know what? If you can't use eclipses as a metaphor for the federal government and their effectiveness, then what's the point of having an eclipse? You know, no point.
Specifically you too, because as I recall, Total Eclipse of the Heart is one of your greatest karaoke songs.
Oh, the greatest. Yes. So, sorry. Total Eclipse of the Heart is probably the greatest. I actually got to blow some minds. People don't know me sometimes. I go to places, they don't know who I am, or they meet me as being like, you know, there on behalf of something. And then it's like, oh, we're doing karaoke tonight. And it's like, oh, Nora, do you do karaoke? And I'm like, a little bit. I can try. And then you just kind of like lay it on the floor and blow everyone's mind. And they're like, what did I just witness? And you're like, it was magic. It was magic. So, yes.
Yeah, dear listeners, if you ever have a chance to experience Nora doing karaoke, she's very good at it, and you should. And I don't know, maybe some of our Edmonton listeners will get that chance. Maybe we'll find a karaoke place when we're there, because
could you imagine,
April 20th is fast approaching, and that means that we will be in Edmonton. Can I imagine? Of course I can imagine. I've lived it. I have lived this. There's been many a Sandy and Nora duet at a karaoke before. And,
that's right.
You know, if we find a spot, like maybe we'll do that in Edmonton. But if not, we'll still have fun in Edmonton because we are doing a live show on April 20th.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's an afternoon show. So bring your kids, bring your grandparents, bring your great grandparents, bring the ashes of the people you love. We are going to be at the Citadel Theater and tickets are on sale. We figured out all of our problems. They are on sale at the box office of the Citadel Theater. So you can buy tickets from them directly. And we're going to have a reception after. There won't be karaoke at the reception, but it's not going to go too late. And so who knows? Who knows what Edmonton is going to bring to us? And Sandy, do you know, we got a question. When are we coming back to Toronto? I know the people want some live shows. And I know that people want live shows all over this country. And I want to say to you all, we are going to do our best.
We are going to do our best. If we can figure out a time to be in Toronto at the same time, we'll come back to Toronto. And if there are other times in between that we can eke out some space between our schedules to figure out some time to go elsewhere, we will do that too. So we will let you know. We're constantly looking for opportunities to be where you are, dear listeners. So we'll let you know the next time we have a chance to be in the same city and to do a live show with you, because it is always more fun to do this live and in person, because it's great to have you there with us, and it's great to be in front of one another and to actually be able to react to one another's facial expressions and so on. So we will let you know. But in the meantime, thank you all for being so patient with us. And if you're waiting for us to come to your city, and thank you to those of you who contribute to the podcast. We have some thank yous to give out today, Nora.
Yeah, and we took last week off, so this is a double whammy list of thank yous. So thanks to everybody who donates the podcast and shares it, especially for those sharing it. Honestly, I feel a little bit like, it's hard to penetrate the media space right now in Canada. You know, it doesn't matter how many people listen to Sandy and Nora, it's still a small group of Canadians, and we need to spread the word as far and wide as possible. So thank you everybody who shared it this last week, who comment on our stuff on Instagram, who encouraged me on Instagram to try and Instagram harder, which I do. And especially thank you to folks who've donated to the podcast, because you are the ones that allow us to operate. And I should actually say, we've had script writing support for the last, I think, month and a half. The individual doesn't want us to name them. So that's why I haven't given a credit in the daily news shows. But that the money that you donate has been helping us with that. And it's been an amazing, amazing help. Like, I just feel so much better and so much more energized to be able to do the daily news. So without further ado, thank you so much to Andrea, Tynan, Jesse, Gruffalo, Rafaela, Ro, Anna, Chloe, Autumn, and Josh. Thank you all so much.
Thank you all so, so much. So, Nora, I'm very unsurprisingly unenthused about our government right now. It's just like hitting me even more this week, just smacking me right dab in the face that government is not working, you know? And I'm just like, at what point do we stop pretending that it is? I'm like watching this week go by where a lot of what has been in the news has been about the housing crisis, and the government's efforts on the housing crisis has been about what's happened in Gaza, and in particular this week, some aid workers from Western countries, including one person from Quebec, being killed by an Israeli airstrike, and how the government is responding to that. Government response to what's happening in Haiti and assistance there, or non-assistance, as the case may be. And all of these like announcements that are coming out just before the budget. And I'm just like, we've said before how very often like the scale of what the government is doing doesn't seem to match what is happening in reality. And I feel very much that way this week, even more. I feel like it's smacking me in the face even more than usual. And I'm just like, at what point do we stop pretending that anything that is announced works for anything? Like, here's the big example that's in my head, just to bring this down to something more concrete. One of the pre-budget announcements that was announced this week was a fund that is going to help more homes be built across Canada. Did you see this?
I did.
And I mean, we've talked about a very similar initiative that had been announced previously months ago. We've talked about this before. It's like, if people are experiencing hardship right now, making rent or making mortgage payments, an announcement that's like, we've got you covered, after, you know, a couple months of trying to paint bad housing policy squarely onto Pierre Poilievre's shoulders, because he was once the housing minister some ages long ago when the Conservatives were in power. It's like, now announcing this sort of a program that won't you won't realize the benefits of until way, way long in the future, and expecting to be congratulated for that. Like, I'm just like, it's just like, are they okay? Like, do they know real human beings? Or have they met humans and spoken to them? These are the questions that I have.
You know, I saw some comment that came from the Prime Minister's office, and the name attached to the comment was someone who I was like, I know that name. And it was, oh yeah, that guy was a hack in the student, back in the days of the student movement, and he was a liberal piece of shit. The liberals,
that's a weird thing when that happens, huh? I mean, I feel like unfortunately you and I are going to experience that for the rest of our lives, and it's like,
I know.
Really shitty to be like, guys, that person sucks, and here's all the ways,
yeah,
here's all the ways that I know that whatever is going to be announced is not going to be good, because and not really have anything like concrete to say behind it. Like, it's just like, you got to believe me on the vibes here, because I spent a lot of time with them in very formative years.
Yeah, it's kind of scary, because you know you can watch government and see it not get things right and be like, why is that happening? This doesn't make any sense. Something's wrong. But then when you actually know some of the people, or you know how some of the people operate who are in these positions of power, and you're like, oh, that's why, because the liberals drink their own piss. Like, they just can't get out of the fishbowl that they're all in, and they're always hiring internal liberals. And this is something that really sets the Liberal Party apart from the Conservatives. Like, they actually understand how government is supposed to work. I mean, it'll be bad because they'll be more efficiently making things worse for us, but there will be an influx of adults back in the room. And this was something that was really, like, really occurred to me when I was at the last Conservative convention, because, you know, the Conservative staffers and the Conservative Party hacks, they're all right now operating in, like, high level positions within, you know, the oil industry or the oil and gas industry, or they're lobbyists working really, really closely with the grocery industry, or they're on the boards of the telecommunications industry. And they're all going to rush back into government. And with the liberals, it's all a bunch of, like, fucking hacks that all were just liberal activists from the age of 18. And that's been their qualification to work in the prime minister's office. It's a completely different way of doing government. And one is effective in terms of carrying out the mission of a government, which when it's a conservative mission will be bad. And one is ineffective in all ways and doing everything. And so how have the liberals tried to hide that inefficiency or the inefficacy? Well, they have really leaned into grabbing progressive sounding policy things, talking about progressive policy, but then never actually implementing it. You know, like, one of the things that I saw this past week, I'm sure you saw the announcement too, was that they're going to have a breakfast program within the schools across Canada.
I was just about to bring that up. Yeah. What'd you think about that?
I'd love
that?
To hear. Okay. And it's like, okay, that sounds amazing. What's the catch? Because there's going to be a catch. Namely, that they'll probably use this to try and get elected. The Conservatives will say that's not federal responsibility. The Liberals won't move fast enough on it. They'll make it an election issue, and it'll never happen.
I mean, yeah, like, look, the I was going to bring this up because it's a great policy. It sounds like it's going to be great, you know, making sure that children have access to food. And then it's like, okay, you look at the policy, you take a look at, like, okay, great, let's see more. Give me more, government. Tell me how you're going to accomplish this. And I mean, they're saying all the right things, you know, like, this is really going to benefit low-income families. This is really going to benefit people in marginalized communities. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're, like, reading on, trying to get to the meat of it. And it's like, details to come in the budget. And it's just like, okay, it's just another one of these cynical announcements where once the election gets called, because it will get called, the government's going to be able to say, well, we wanted to do this, and they're canceling it. And then even if they do win, they're going to say, well, it's going to take us 3 years to design the program, everybody. Like, just hold your horses. It's going to take some time. And they're going to see how long they can squeeze another program out of this, because, or another election or some other sort of support out of it. Like, that's how government has been running for a while. And the other way that government has been running is like, it's the same issue that we see with the with issues of safety and policing, right? Like, there's issues of safety, and the only thing that we can do to solve it is throw money at the police and then argue about like the specific implementation that is going to be taken that's going to, you know, rein in the police enough and make sure the money is being used appropriately enough until, you know, you talk yourself out on that. And then it's time to throw more money at the problem. I mean, I feel like that's what's happening with sustainability efforts, and in particular, the carbon tax. Like, all of the argument about the carbon tax, I mean, the government and the parties, all of them, are loving it, I'm sure, because it gives them something to talk about. But none of it is really relevant to the problem that is facing us, the existential problem that is facing us as humanity.
Of course they haven't. The fucking
carbon tax is not enough. I feel like all the studies that show what marginal effects carbon tax has on reducing the use of emissions or having some sort of impact on behavior. Like, it's been out there for years, and still it's like the number one thing that the government is like, oh, well, we're going to argue about the efficacy of this. And then the opposition parties are like, we're going to argue about how shitty this is. And it's like, are we just not going to talk about the actual problem? Are we not going to do anything about the actual problem? Do we not care to legislate policy that's going to curb the actual issue? No, we just have this shadow issue over here, much like policing, and we'll just throw money at that and be like, we've done a good job, and then argue about how we've done a good job. Like, what in the fuck is going on? What's going on?
That's what's going on.
At what point do we stop pretending that is government? That's not government. That's, I don't know what that is. It's a smokescreen.
Yeah. Well, it is actually really fascinating, because you can think about the difference between that and the difference between a Doug Ford, who has been really putting his foot on the gas and advancing a lot of really shitty projects completely against the will of Ontarians and against even the things that he ran on. But again, you can see that they have the competence to actually do some of these things. Where with the Liberals, like, they are so much more of a managing government, like always managing mm-hmm. things, managing, mm-hmm. managing. Yeah. And maybe there'll be more funding here and they'll pull funding out of there or whatever. But it's just about management. And I mean, part of I've been really, really actually quite like I want to say depressed, because it's not like depression depressed, but I've been pretty fucking depressed about the state of things for the last couple of weeks. And key to that feeling that I have is the book that I'm currently working on, which is the second part of the series on Canada in Decline that looks specifically on the corporate control of this country. And, you know, the decisions that were made by the conservatives in the mid-1980s have straitjacketed us into the results that we are seeing today. Now, that isn't to say that they were... they had to happen. They weren't givens. They were made possible by even more aggressive austerity measures and neoliberal measures that were implemented by Liberal governments throughout the last 30, 35, 40 years. But it's actually really unbelievable to see the line from 1984 and going towards free trade and fundamentally transforming Canada's economy to facilitate free trade. And all the way up to today, where all we have, like, we've got these, like, the deputy governor of the Bank of Canada saying, oh my God, we are in a break glass moment. That is the break glass part of the emergency, because productivity is so bad in this country. And it's like, productivity has always been bad in this country, because there is absolutely no market where there's actual competition. It's all oligarchies. We all know that Canada is this kind of company in a trench coat. And there's no fucking reason for companies in Canada to innovate, because they just sell themselves off to other companies to make as much money as possible. And then the incentives are there to sell yourself off as, like, to make as much money as possible. Of course, there's no fucking productivity in this country. But, you know, you can't even say that on national television, because the assumptions are, well, you know, we're constrained by choices, and we're constrained by the markets, and this is the way that things are. And it's like, this is the way that things are because of four decades of the shittiest people making the shittiest decisions possible to enrich the fucking 1% while leaving everyone else at different levels of fucking struggling. Like, that is why we are here right now. And the liberals have like, the conservatives do it and they don't give any fucks about doing it. And I always joke when I am around conservatives and conservative circles, where it's like, you know, they would come up to me and I would go up to them and say kind of like, well, at least we respect you for having a fucking, like, opinion. Like, mm-hmm. you actually have mm-hmm. politics. Mm-hmm. The liberals are so slippery. They don't have politics. They will tell you what they think you want to hear. And when you start to do that as a national policy, nothing makes any sense. And not only does it not make any sense, and it makes people check out, and then the way that people check out, and this is studied and across Western nations, that as wealth inequality continues to be disbalanced, the poorer people check out more often from elections than everyone else. And then there's a shift to the right, because the right is selling something that sounds good and they are competent fucking managers. This is where we are right now. And as I say, it's depressing. It's depressing me. It's not good.
Yeah, because here's the thing, right? Like, as you say, there are people who know what they're doing, and there are people who are, I don't know, pretending that they know what they're doing, or refusing to do anything, like, or just staying out of the way while other people do, the conservatives are doing what they know how to do. And it's like, while that's happening, while we are being talked at, by our politicians who are just saying things that they know we want to hear, people are setting up more of, like, what happened in the 1980s to continue to happen. It's like, did you see the announcement this week on artificial intelligence?
Yes, I saw that.
Right. It's like, this is also a great example of this, right? It's like, the government announces $2.4 billion for AI investments. What does that mean? I mean, it's like, for fuck's sake, right? Like, we have, like, a bit of a communications problem in Canada. We certainly noted that, like, during the pandemic, we have a monopoly in our country, as we noted during the pandemic, that one day that, like, I can't remember which phone company it was, but one phone company went out and, like, the banks weren't working. It was just Rogers. Like, everything was it was Rogers, and then everything was terrible in Canada for a little bit. Wasn't it? It wasn't Bell. I don't know.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. There are only three options. Pick one. One of them failed catastrophically. And it's like, okay, we've got massive communications issues. We have communications issues that are, like, secondary to the primary problem, which is that because there's nobody at the helm, there is no one who's, like, kind of doing the public work that needs to be done with respect to communications and the internet and how we stay connected to one another. People are able to do some of the most ugly, hateful type of organizing using communication systems, because we have no plan for these sort of things. And it's like, oh my gosh, the government has $2.4 billion that they're able to access. Cool. What are they doing with it? They're investing in AI. Okay, what does that mean? Like, investing in I don't know, like, AI protections, on AI literacy, on, like, what does it mean? Nora, I'll tell you, here's my big prediction. They're going to invest in some companies to, like, do AI research or whatever, or whoever's already at the helm waiting that they know about, that they're going to give that money to become the companies that are the ones who are going to run the market in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But gosh, there's, like, such an opportunity right now to learn from the past of, like, where we failed, and to use any sort of investments that are going to be used in the communications sector to, like, actually resolve some issues that are longstanding. And it's like, no, we're just going to announce $2.4 billion to invest in the AI sector so that Canadians will be ready for AI. Like, that's the language that they're using. Which means what? What does that mean? Does somebody tell me something, please? Anyone?
I'll tell you what it means.
Do say.
They're going to hand the private sector $2 billion and say, develop AI. This is why research and development funding in Canada is so brutally low, because the government has always, and it's always, almost always the Liberals, stepping in and being like, here's some money, develop AI. Like... $2 billion is about the total budget of CBC Radio Canada, as we have said on this podcast before. right? Imagine doubling the budget of the national news agency in this country and what could be done with that budget, what actually could be done with long form video and short form video and morning shows and fucking political analysis shows. They are not ever going to do that because they much rather create a black hole of like throw the money into the hole and they an AI is going to fucking come out. Like it is such a good example of how completely fucked up the liberals are when it comes to research and development and the role of government in funding private sector research. Like they're not pouring this into university research, mm-mm, right? It's not $2 billion going into fucking NSERC and CIHR and SHRC to figure out
the
AI.
The public institutions that already exist, Nora. That's right. Not a good photo op.
No, I guess not. And then, and you know, like, so AI is also one of these things that doesn't really, I mean, it means something, but it doesn't mean something. And it is definitely not going to save fucking fuck all. It's not going to make Canada a world fucking competing anything because you have to have a planned program. If the government was going to create a public institution to make AI or study AI or AI in Canada or whatever, like that would be something because there would be adults in charge of a program that you could do, like you could run something, but you throw it to corporations in random sums. It's like the money's going to fucking vanish into shareholder pockets. Those companies are going to get bought out by other companies, probably international companies. And then the fucking intellectual property, which is also a whole Western concept that a lot of countries in the world are no longer playing along with, it then becomes owned by fucking foreign multinationals like everything fucking else in Canada. Not to mention how many foreign multinationals are going to get that money because they're operating in Canada, probably a lot. Now, you know, I don't know if you saw the first of these pre-budget announcements, which was related to childcare. They're announcing several billion dollars as well. I think it was like $4 billion or $3 billion, or maybe it's $2 billion. Doesn't matter. For childcare. And it's like, Sandy, so you're offering $2 billion to childcare. What would you do with that?
I would like build a program, a childcare program. What are they doing with it?
Well, the most of that money is going to childcare centers to expand capacity. Okay. I mean, okay. Yeah. Like maybe, great. Maybe. Yeah. Like that's great. I can see some problems with that. Like, you know, your childcare center's already got 50 kids, but you're going to go up to 100 kids. Like that's a fucking lot of little kids. Maybe not ideal. Maybe the problem isn't actually expanding what's already there, but also creating new things, right? So that people have more closer access to different childcare options. But okay, fine.
And investing in education for early childhood educators and so on.
It's good. Except it's not just, they're not giving them the money. These are loans. They are loaning childcare centers money to expand for capital projects.
Oh my God. What?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Like, and they announce this and then the media reports this like, oh yeah, it's gonna be loans. I mean, there's a portion of it that's grants, but it's way less. It's like a couple tens of millions will be grants and then like the billion and a half or whatever left over will be loans. And it's like, who are you loaning the money to?
Why would the government, like, every time I hear any sort of thing, like initiative that the government gives out that needs to be paid back, I'm just like, what in the world is happening? The government is not a bank. Why are they giving out loans for what should be a universally accessible public program? Why would they give out loans?
But who are you loaning the money to? Like, Is it a council of parents? And so then that council of parents in 5 years, which will be, newsflash, totally different fucking parents because, you know, most kids don't stay in daycare that long unless you've got like three kids all in a row. Fine. They're the ones that are going to have to pay back this loan. Like, you know, in 10 years, these daycares are going to be paying back a loan to the federal government. What? Why? Who is overseeing the bureaucracy to make sure that these loans are paid back? You're going to throw that to CRA? What happens if they default on their loans? It's a childcare center. And they specifically say the money like is not going to, it's going to not-for-profit childcare centers. So it's like, why?
What?
Yeah. Why would you make it? It's because it sounds good. It sounds prudent to not just throw money into a black hole unless it's for AI given to private companies. For childcare, it has to be loans. Isn't that interesting that it's not loans for AI?
Yeah, it is interesting. It's interesting that when you think of children, it's loans, and when you think of AI, it's grants. But like, I do think that the AI announcement is like worth taking a closer look at. It's like No, it's not. It's not worth taking a closer look at. It is worth pointing out the ridiculousness of some of the language that they're using. It's like there will be a new AI compute access fund is part of what they're creating with this money. They're also going to start a $200 million fund that will go towards boosting the adoption of AI in agriculture, healthcare, and clean technology.
Why? In healthcare? Like, really? Are you fucking kidding me?
Why? And what does that mean? What does it mean? What are you saying? Like, how are you going to use AI in healthcare? And why is it a good thing for the government to invest hundreds of millions of dollars in getting the government to do that? And then immediately, right? Like, it's like, of course, they know that you're thinking that. And so the government needs to say exactly what they think you're thinking. So the next line, the next thing that they say is that they're also launching a $50 million AI safety institute.
Oh my God. Sorry. Are you fucking kidding me? I see.
No. There's a $50 million, plans to launch a $50 million AI safety institute to protect against advanced or nefarious AI systems.
What?
An additional $5.1 million will go towards creating the Office of the AI.
Of course.
And data.
How many commissioners have they come up with?
To enforce.
This is like the 10th commissioner or something.
Yeah, I know. It's like, hey, man, as long as they can like create a new position, throw millions of dollars at a new office and say, look, folks, we are doing something. You know, AI is something that's out in the zeitgeist. We got to announce something on it. We're not going to actually study it or try to understand it or understand how we what our responsibility and role is as the public or learn from anything in the past. Just going to throw some money out there. And don't worry, we're covering all the bases. Agriculture, healthcare, they're all going to get AI money, and we're going to have new AI police. It's going to be great. That's going to keep everybody safe.
I just am thinking of my cousin who's a farmer getting his hands on AI.
Maybe he needs it. You should ask
him. I can't imagine him caring about AI, let alone it being useful to his fucking operation in any way. Like, this is what's so fascinating, right? Because there are experts in Canada that are studying AI, obviously. And there are people that are developing AI. And, you know, AI is like not a thing, you know, like it is a feeling, and whoever is saying it means one thing, but you can receive it and it might mean something completely different. As we just discovered, like, you know, AI systems in the United States at a grocery store were actually fucking people in another country, literally watching people go through the checkout, right? That was supposed to be AI, right? This is a job fucking replacement, which is also very funny to spend $2 billion on figuring out how to replace our jobs. Okay. But you know, one of the things that has been striking me so much reading a lot about Canada and this transformation of our markets was how democratic the participation was in really big issues of the day. And, you know, you can argue that maybe they were like not necessary or overly ridiculous, but royal commissions on things studied the thing of the day, right? The Kent Commission studied the emergence of a media ecosystem in the 1980s that was, you know, really under threat by American and foreign press companies, and how do we protect a Canadian media landscape? That was the Kent Commission. The commission that I've spent the most amount of time with in the last 2 months has been the McDonald Commission, which was a commission that was looking at the future of Canada's economy. And they had, you know, town halls and submissions and presentations, and commissioners went to every part of Canada and people were able to participate, and they produced a 1200 page report, and the report covers everything about the state of Canada. And what's so fascinating about it is it's like a snapshot of where Canada was and where average people, mostly driven by, you know, capitalists, people in positions of corporate power, saying this is where we think we need to go. And out of the McDonald Commission comes this discussion on free trade. And it's so fascinating because it was like, you know, a participatory democratic thing where people could come in and say, like, you know, this is what we think, you know, assuming we're not going to change the capitalist system, this is what we think is the direction that we're heading. And by and large, the people were correct. I mean, they also convinced politicians to go in that direction. Why wouldn't you do a royal commission on AI right now if you're really curious about what it's going to do and what it is and where people are at with it in Canada? Well, because we haven't actually had a royal commission in fucking decades. We completely stopped doing that work. We've stopped doing that work to such an extent that I don't know if you saw this, Sandy, but in Nova Scotia, after the mass casualty commission that they had, one of the recommendations was to have a review of the police or policing in that province. And they've outsourced the consultation process to Deloitte.
Oh my God, Nora, you know, one of the things I want to ask you about your book, hearing you talk about it, is like, are you able to track, looking at the period in history that you're looking at, what was the last thing the government built?
Oh yeah.
Like concretely, like what was the last thing that they actually built that wasn't just thrown to the private sector? Or just like some sort of lipstick on a pig situation, but something that they actually built.
Well, I mean, the thing that's most recent that they actually built was CERB and the wage subsidy program, which turned into total shit because it evaporated mm-hmm. as well. But if you go back before mm-hmm. that, the 1980s onward are a period of mass deconstruction, right? And so in those eras, nothing was built. Crown corporations were sold off and privatized. Mm-hmm. Free trade meant that things like all of a sudden monetary policy became how we controlled inflation. Does that sound familiar? That's where we are today. So, I mean, that was kind of built in the sense of the consensus around it was built that this is how we have to manage the economy now. And now it's fucking sacrosanct just to say otherwise. But for a federal government to actually build something, I am really struggling to think of anything in the post-1980 era. I could say lots before that.
Yeah, maybe our listeners will be able to think of something and let us know. But I really feel like our government really hasn't built. I mean, even CERB was just like, it actually just points to the fact that they haven't built stuff because right. of what a disaster it was and continues to be for people who are being told to pay back. Money that they received that they thought that they were receiving that they were supposed to receive, and apparently the government says that they weren't supposed to receive whatever, all of that. But I mean, I look at also the one of the announcements that got so much news this week that I just thought was I just kept wanting to bang my head against the wall every time I was hearing it, was this, that the government is helping renters by asking credit agencies to count the fact that they pay their rent on a regular basis onto their credit scores, which to me is, it's like, wow. Like, we are so bought into this, like, this system of like credit ratings, which is, I mean, gosh, we could probably have a whole episode on that, which is like a terrible system that puts, like, that takes people out of the market for basic necessities that they need that shouldn't be marketized. And the government is now saying, not even doing something, pleading. the announcement is that the government is pleading with credit agencies to count this, to count paying rent towards average people's credit so that they can eventually one day maybe buy a house in an outrageously speculative market that they won't be able to buy a house in, because that's what what is happening, that's not doing anything.
No, it's not doing anything. It's not doing anything. And you know, one of the really scary parts of all of this is that the only way to get out of all of this is a true radical break with the status quo. And it was interesting because I was talking about this last night with someone who I just met. I was talking about this last night with someone who I just met, in case you're wondering what it's like to just meet me. And and she was, you know, kind of saying, wow, like there's just nothing we can do, right? And I was like, I know, but I'm still optimistic because, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we do have expertise to do things. Like we can build things, and people do build things. People do build really amazing local programs or really amazing local initiatives, or, you know, we're still kind of building transit systems. I mean, I shouldn't talk about Quebec City. We're having a real problem with that right now. But, you know, there are experts out there. And so it's like, what will it take to organize people to actually come together and say, like, this is a death march. We started a death march in 1980. Canadians didn't accept it. In fact, Canadians fought tooth and nail against it. But our bullshit parliamentary first past the post system made it possible to give, you know, fake majorities, fake super majorities to different politicians. And they chose the direction of death march. Now, we are in that death march now, in an unquestionably deep fucking way. And we can't wait for the elastic to just snap to go like, okay, now we can fucking fix it. We have to organize around it. And it's tough because, you know, as I've realized this week in a really major way, we were talking about Canadian institutions being in decline. That includes left-wing institutions. And the left-wing institutions being in decline, a lot of them don't even realize it. Now, there are some really great revival things, some unions doing super awesome work. But by and large, this is a disaster for us. And, you know, we have to stop this death march if we're going to fucking survive.
You know what? I don't want to die, Nora. I don't want to go out like this. I don't want it to be like a slow death march and watching the awfulness just like crumble around us as everyone pretends that something is happening that's really not. And so, yeah, you know, I'm with you on the organizing, and that's what we need to do. But we also, I think we need to, gosh, like I just feel like there's a bit of complacency in the world right now, like at where we are. Like there's an acceptance of everything not working, you know? Does that feel real to you? Like that there's like an acceptance of like, that's what this death march is, right? It's just like, yeah, you can't expect things to work. But actually, you can. Like, sorry, but you can. You can expect things to work. We should be like, our institutions and our education systems, our healthcare systems, everything that has been falling apart is because of decisions that have been made. Decisions, active decisions. These aren't things that are just like, you know, being taken by the elements or falling apart because that's what happens to institutions over time. No, there are decisions that have been made. I'm glad that you're tracking those decisions in your book. And I want that complacency to end. I want to see when I'm reading the news, someone pointing out like, what the fuck are you talking about when the government is making these ridiculous announcements like, hey, we're helping renters by pleading with credit agencies, or we're gonna create AI for the farmers and an AI police to protect them all. Like, I want there to be some sort of like, hey, let's stop for a second and take a look at what's actually being said here, because it doesn't make any sense, and we shouldn't have to accept this as an excuse for running a fucking country.